Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us this week. On today's podcast, we'll hear from Katie Moyer from Kentucky Hemp Works about the state of hemp in Kentucky. We'll also hear from Midwest Hemp Council President and Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose McKinney & Evans, Justin Swanson, who'll talk about the just-released USDA hemp guidelines, along with other procedures involved in determining those guidelines. Also on the program, Midwest Hemp Council co-founder and executive director Jamie Campbell Petty. Jamie will be talking about the upcoming Hemp at the Crossroads Education and Trade Show coming up next weekend, November 16th and 17th. You'll want to stick around and get some more information on that. But first, we start the program with Katie Moyer, owner of Kentucky Hemp Works. She also serves on two Kentucky boards, the Kentucky Agriculture Development Board, as well as the Kentucky Hemp Advisory Board. Katie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's always great to get folks on here that have been involved for quite some time with hemp. And your involvement goes back even before the 2014 Farm Bill, back as early as, what, 2009, 2010, you were getting involved in the hemp industry or actually starting to create the hemp industry.
Yeah, I think by 2009, we had already drafted a hemp bill to try to legalize hemp in Kentucky, and then spent the next several years until 2012 trying to pass the bill. So there was a lot of traveling and educating and just talking to anybody who would listen about hemp. If they would stand still for more than a few seconds, we were talking to them about hemp. And so it took us until 2013 to get a bill passed in Kentucky. It started around the end of 2008.
Well, obviously, in the last year or so that we've been doing the podcast here, we continuously refer to Kentucky as one of the leaders in the hemp industry, because you guys did get involved early and quick, and obviously you had a large role in that. What made you decide back in, again, we were talking maybe 2007 to 2010, somewhere in that area that you got involved. What made you get involved and what attracted you to the hemp industry back when there was no hemp industry?
Well, back then, you know, there was no discussion about CBD at the time. There was only a few people talking about the cannabinoids. And what we really were pushing was the fuel, the energy, the construction materials. We had a hemp equals jobs platform. And what really enticed me, or what I would say triggered my interest in hemp from the very beginning, was hearing... Actually, it was during a presidential debate. Ron Paul, one of the presidential candidates, was talking about hemp being more efficient for ethanol production than corn. Mm-hmm. And in my county, which is a big agricultural county, we have one of the largest ag counties in the state, if not the largest ag producing county. We've got a lot of farmers. We've got a big ethanol cooperative, and it's a successful cooperative that was started with some government grant money, and farmers, put some skin in the game. But I thought that, you know, it made sense that if we could do ethanol with hemp, then we should at least try it in Christian County, because we have this fantastic ethanol plant. And up until then, I thought that hemp was just T-shirts and necklaces. So that really is what triggered my research into the food and the energy and the and the medicine, but we were really looking at things from more of a energy and environment and an economic standpoint. But that was really what triggered it. And I ended up setting up a meeting with our local, the head of our local ethanol plant, just out of the blue, asked him if he would meet with me, and he did. And unfortunately, we still haven't made any progress on ethanol, but we've found that, you know, there's so much more that it can do that, one of these days somebody will find that spark of interest in doing ethanol out of hemp and pursue that.
obviously Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has been hemp friendly. Have you dealt a lot with Mitch McConnell on this issue, and did he open that door for you, or did you find that there was some pushback early on from the Kentucky politicians?
Well, and early on, yeah, there definitely was some pushback. I tried to talk to McConnell a few times, wrote letters to his office, waited around at events to try to catch him after the event, and he just wasn't interested. But I will say that over that 5-year period of educating people and getting people to come around to the idea of hemp, we really managed to turn a lot of our elected officials 180 degrees. For example, there are legislators on the state level who actually made the comment, I'm proof that you can teach an old dog new tricks. And Mitch McConnell was one of those. He wasn't the one who said that, but he was an example of them, and there were many others. In fact, there's a lot of legislators now who were not supportive of hemp, but after they learned more and they were educated and they came around to hemp, now are using or topical root salve products to help with their own, their own problems, their families, their lives. So there's been a huge sort of revolution in the thinking of what cannabis really is from our elected officials in Kentucky.
All right. Once again, we're speaking with Katie Moyer, the owner of Kentucky Hemp Works, and we'll talk a little bit about Kentucky Hemp Works here. Now, Katie, when the Farm Bill was passed in 2014, you had a chance to grow one of the first legal privately owned plots since World War II. So that had to be a nice milestone for you after all the effort that you'd been putting into this.
It was a huge milestone, and that really is what created Kentucky Hemp Works, because I never went into all this thinking that I was going to, legalize hemp and start a hemp business. That was the furthest thing from my mind. Mm-hmm. I thought that surely I would have some sort of, place in the hemp industry once we legalized it, but I'm not a farmer. I never have been a farmer. And so it didn't occur to me that starting a hemp business would be on my list of things to do in the coming years. Mm-hmm. But the 2014 crop, which was a very small crop, it was a fiber crop from Italy, that gave me some material to work with. It gave us, we harvested for the stalks because it was a fiber crop, but we didn't know what to do with the stalks. And instead, we harvested the roots after the stalks were cut. We went and pulled them out by hand and started tinkering around with recipes. And those, we made salve with the roots. And then those salve recipes that we were tinkering with, we just tried them again on anybody who would stand still long enough. If they had pain and they would stand still long enough, we would give them some or put it on them. And I started getting phone calls from people saying, look, I've been using this little goop that you gave me, and I haven't taken a Lord tab in a week, but now I'm out. And I need you to make more. Mm-hmm. And I kept getting calls and responses like that, like, hey, this is really working. I need more. And, what we found was that it was so good for so many things, not just joint pain, which the roots were historically used for, but all kinds of things. Nerve pain, people were getting relief from fibromyalgia, people were getting relief from their migraines. And these were things that we had no idea would happen. So as we were trying it for joint pain, we discovered a tremendous amount of other uses. And it kind of got to the point where it was like, okay, we're just going to have to keep making this. Mm-hmm. And so we started making it with little plastic souffle cups, like what you get ranch dressing in a restaurant when you want to take a to-go cup. Mm-hmm. and we cut out little stickers, like hello, my name is stickers. We cut the white parts out and write what was in it on the white part, and we stick it on the top of the little plastic souffle cup. And from there, it just grew after, people took a chance on it. We had a couple bucks together and got some metal tins. And the next thing we got actual labels. And the next thing we moved from paper labels to plastic labels. And And everything has just been on a shoestring budget. So we grew as we grew, you know, as we, you know, as we gained capital, we invested it straight back into the business and have been growing and growing like that ever since the end of 2014. So we've really come a long way, and now we've got a fully operational seed processing facility where we crush hemp seed oil from the seeds. That's the vegetable oil. And then we use the byproduct of that, which is the seed cake. That's the protein and fiber of the seeds. And then from there, those raw materials go into our line of products, as well as selling those raw materials to other companies to get started or do what they do best.
Well, Katie, as a pioneer of hemp, somebody who's not just in it to make a quick buck or just recently got involved, nothing wrong with that, of course. But again, we're just pointing out the difference here. You've been involved in over a decade now, fighting that info war on hemp. Let me ask you this on a personal level. You say that you go out and you give people salves and things, and they come back and they say, you know, that really worked, and can I get more? But did you have any blowback in the beginning from folks that said, well, if this is such a good product like you say it is, before I use it, why has it been illegal all this time? Why does it have such a bad stigma to it? Why can't I just pop an aspirin like I've done all my life? How do you answer those folks?
Well, we actually we saw a lot of what a dear friend of mine refers to as the chuckle factor. And that is when you set up a table or you're talking to somebody and you say, you know, I've got this hemp product, and then they chuckle a little bit and they maybe make a joke about if they're going to get high or will they have the munchies later. But honestly, every time that happened, and it did happen a lot in the beginning, but every time that happened, we had an opportunity to educate people. And quite honestly, I would say that our percentages for people who left educated and who didn't just, you know, ignore us, but who left educated and who maybe even came back and made a purchase or tried it and really liked it. I mean, those percentages were really high. There was a lot of people who started out just kind of like, I don't know about these girls, but but later they realized what an effect it had on their lives. And you mentioned, you know, taking an aspirin. We heard from so many people who were tired of taking aspirin. They didn't want to take the Lortabs anymore.
And it's not good for you.
Xanax and the Vicodin and all these things. Like, they were done with it. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people that I've talked to who were like, this gabapentin is killing me.
Right.
And I mean, I got goosebumps just saying that because, you know, it's scary thinking about what is going on in some people's lives because they're doing just exactly what their doctor told them. Mm-hmm. And it's not that their doctor is a bad person, but the drugs that they're taking are affecting their lives in a worse way than they're helping. So they're really, you know, a lot of people were weighing the pros and the cons, and they were feeling like the cons were outweighing the pros. And so they were looking for something else.
Fantastic.
And as far as, you know, the business side of things, like, sure, there's a lot of people looking to make a quick buck, but the point of opening a business is to make money and to create mm-hmm. jobs and to put that money back in our tax bases and our communities. And one thing that Kentucky Hemp Works has always done is try to support our community as much as they've supported us. So we've been really excited to sponsor, you know, we've got a local kid who's a race car driver who is, his car is decked out in our logo and hemp leaves. And so he's educating his friends, families, and, you know, the other parents and things like that. And you know, local efforts, usually end up putting back into their communities more than they take. And so that's kind of what our policy has always been.
Once again, Katie Moyer, owner of Kentucky Hemp Works. Katie, we certainly appreciate you joining us this week. It's always nice to get a different perspective, a perspective from a different state, I should say, and especially Kentucky, given, as I said earlier, you guys were kind of the granddaddy of hemp growing here. And let's go back to the agricultural side here. Again, you started growing several years ago. You had the first hemp crop in 2014. You've had a few years under your belt. We just had 1 year here in Indiana. Some in the media are calling it a failure and a disaster, and that, you know, these people lost this money and that money. I think people going into that understood that was a good possibility. You have to crawl before you walk. So maybe they don't have the information that they should have when they write those articles. But tell us, in the last couple of years in Kentucky, how things have gone as far as the growing side of things, whether it's weather issues, how the crops have been, that sort of thing. What are you experiencing in Kentucky?
Well, you know, one thing about being a leader in anything is that you're always going to be the first one to hit every roadblock and every pothole and get smacked in the face with a tree branch as you're going under it. And we were no stranger to that at all. We actually started out with a lot of work to do. We had legislative, you know, political games being played so that our bill didn't even start out that great. Mm-hmm. So we've had work to do to improve things as far as in a regulatory sense every year since then. But we've also, you know, we've learned a lot of very difficult lessons about weather and mold and drying capabilities and things like that. And so where I'm seeing a lot of the failures coming is just that it's when people get excited to jump into it without planning things a year in advance. And so we have a lot of people that contact us and say, you know, I've got some land, I'm interested in growing. And I always suggest to them, you know, if you're getting ready to fill out an application right now, like you're interested in growing and you're ready to fill out that application and you're going to get approved in a couple months, mm-hmm. just wait until next year. Spend this year preparing everything. Figure out who you're going to sell your crop to. How are you going to logistically dry everything? What are you going to do if it's raining when you're harvesting? How are you going to handle all these things? Because a lot of people are, you know, we have a lot of farmers that are struggling right now. We have a lot of families that are struggling that maybe are not farmers. And they're thinking that hemp is going to be an easy way to make some money and potentially save their farm or help pay their mortgage and this, that, and the other. But what they're forgetting is that when people say, you know, it's an easy crop, you just plant it, take good care of it, and then you let it go. They're not talking about a CBD crop.
Right.
They're talking, you know, a fiber crop. If you get out there and you plant it, you come back in a couple of months and you harvest it. And with the seed crop, you plant it and you do a good job from the beginning, then you come back a few months later and harvest. But it's not like that with CBD. And a lot of people don't understand how much cost and labor and inputs are going to go in there, even if you aren't spraying chemicals on it. There's still a tremendous amount of cost. So I think your media might be maybe gloating a little bit. And I would say that they're probably looking at it and saying, oh, well, this isn't going to work because it didn't work this year. Well, I think if you give Indiana farmers a little bit of time to get their feet wet, get the ball rolling, I don't think you're going to see these problems in the future. Now, having said that, and just to go off that, you know, kind of off on a tangent a little bit, there is a lot of bad actors out there. There's a lot of people who are selling feminized seed that's not feminized, or selling clones that are hot, or selling farmers on the idea that they're going to make $60,000 or $70,000 an acre when they can't even pay the farmers that much.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly wouldn't put the blame on hemp as a plant, for one thing, or the farmers in Indiana for not having a great year. We had crappy weather this year. We had a lot of bad actors in the hemp industry. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some farmers in Indiana that are really angry at whoever provided their seeds or clones right now, because we've got a lot of that going on in Kentucky, too. We are definitely not immune to the bad actors and the problems and the issues that come up in this industry in Kentucky. So, you know, I guess we're all kind of in the same boat. But my best advice is try to do it yourself. Go start at the end, figure out what you're going to do with your end product. If you can make a product, if you can take it all the way to store shelves, that's the best way to go. Be your own processor. Figure out how to turn your crop into something marketable, and then you're never going to depend on somebody else who's going to bail out on you at the last minute.
And there's no excuse for not having the information, because the information is out there. There's folks like you down in Kentucky, Jamie Campbell Petty here in Indiana, that has taken the reins and really made herself available. I know you're available. Kentucky Hempworks is available for that education. So as the industry grows, hopefully we can, no pun intended, weed out the bad players and keep it amongst the people that are in it for the real reason of again, making a living, but doing it the right way, the honest way, and mm-hmm. also promoting the hemp industry. Katie, is there anything else that we need to add at this point?
I would just add, usually when I you know, do an interview or a podcast or something, I always like to, you know, figure out what is the current call to action. And right now, what the hemp industry is facing are regulations from USDA. It's a draft regulation, but it's 160 pages of here's how the USDA feels about hemp, here's how they're going to regulate hemp, or here's how they expect to regulate on the federal level. So there's a lot of talk and discussion over the regulations. I've got some opinions on it. That would be a whole nother podcast if we got into it. But what I would suggest to everybody is to take the time to read through those regulations. They're very easy to find. You can Google it, find it almost anywhere. But read them, see if there's anything that you have problems with, and then contact the USDA. They have a comment period. It's a 60-day comment period mm-hmm. where we can send our suggestions. And if we all are really suggesting the same things, which are, hey, this is putting a big burden on the labs that are doing the testing, and, you know, 15 days, a 15-day harvest window to get your testing done, test results back and back to the farmers are going to be difficult for state departments of agriculture.
Yeah, that's tight.
There are several issues that are going to be extremely difficult logistically for states and farmers to actually work with, and labs to work with. So make your voice heard. Contact the USDA about it for using their process, but also your elected officials. If you're elected officials, especially if you've already developed a relationship with them, but even if you haven't, there is nothing that says that any taxpayer or anybody in the country can't contact their legislator if they have a problem.
That's right. They work for us.
I would encourage everybody. That's right. Yep. Just read through those. Make your voice heard, because USDA has been pretty good to work with, actually, and they will listen to us.
And again, folks can get more information on the MidwestHempCouncil.com website as well on this. Katie Moyer, owner of Kentucky Hempworks. Katie, how can folks get in touch with you, see your website, social media addresses?
Well, you can find us at KentuckyHempWorks.com, and that's works with a KS. And we are on all the social media platforms at KY Hempworks. So you can reach out to us on social media. You can contact us on the website. We've got a phone number there on the site you can call. Send us a message or an email, or follow us, share the information. We do put a lot of educational topics out there, and we really try to remind people, you know, we really try to focus on the whole plant, every bit of the plant, not just the THC and CBD. And so I always say, THC and CBD are great, but they're a very small part of a very big picture. And this plant can do so much more for us than just that. So we try to focus on other things as well as the CBD. But, you know, you can check it out, share the education, and, you know, definitely give us a follow and keep in touch.
Absolutely. And Katie, it's great to talk to somebody with so much information and so much background and somebody who is absorbed into the hemp industry as you have been. So it's great information. We really do appreciate it. And like you said, we kind of did just scratch the surface. We could do another podcast on this. So hopefully we can get you back in the future and do that.
That sounds great. I'd be happy to do so.
Okay, as we continue on, we'll speak with Midwest Hemp Council President and Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose McKinney and Evans, Justin Swanson. Justin, how you doing today?
I'm great, Jason. How are you doing?
Oh, doing fantastic, as always. Thanks for joining us. And we're going to continue talking about the USDA interim final rule on domestic hemp production program. We talked a lot about this last week. We encourage people to go back and listen to that podcast. But to get an update for this week, what kind of questions are we getting out there, comments? What are people saying about this USDA interim final rule?
So I think one of the biggest points of confusion is when it's effective, what it impacts, and kind of where do we go from here moving forward. So to be clear, this interim final rule was effective when it was published back on Halloween, so October 31st. So it's effective now, but the catch is in the 18 Farm Bill, they made it clear that the 14 Farm Bill programs are going to continue in full in effect for a year after they publish it. Mm-hmm. So basically, states are going to be able to, if states have passed legislation and created a hemp program under the 2014 Farm Bill, those states are going to be able to continue to operate as they've always been operating until November of 2020. And that's when it's going to switch over to the 18 Farm Bill and therefore the USDA interim final rule that we see today.
Okay, so right now what they're doing then is making sure that anything that needs to be changed in that 2018 Farm Bill is being changed. Is that the way to look at this?
And just a minor correction there. Anything that needs to be changed in the USDA, in the final interim rule they just published. Mm-hmm. So again, in the 60-day window, USDA has the authority, if they want to use it, based on public comments, on tweaking what that rule says. And that's why we've been so adamant on encouraging people to actually submit comments for areas of improvement to help farmers and really the whole supply chain thrive. So that's why one reason why we've been so adamant about, again, making sure people provide those comments, because if they don't get enough or hardly any, they're just going to say, well, it looks like we did it great, and we're just going to move on.
As politicians will do. And of course, people can get this information by going to the MidwestHempCouncil.com website, scroll down the front page blog there, and you will see a link that will take you to this 160-page document. And I understand we may even have a link, or we should have a link by the time this is posted, to an audio version of that, so you literally don't have to sit and read it. You can listen to somebody read it for you. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's great. And we'll also have some links up there as well, Jason, taking you directly to where you can submit your public comments. Mm-hmm. And that's really important, again, for reasons we explained earlier, because you don't participate, you don't really have a justification to complain. So you really got to engage the process that's in front of us.
Are there any glaring holes or glaring items that really do need to be addressed and that you assume everyone will want to comment on?
excuse me. I think the additional requirements on labs testing hemp samples, I think, is probably going to be one of the hottest issues, mm-hmm. Hopefully, because that really has the potential to create a bottleneck in the supply chain, where farmers are waiting and waiting and waiting for only a handful of labs that can provide the test results they need. That has the potential to delay their harvest. And when you couple that with this kind of a small 15-day window to harvest, it's kind of a recipe for disaster for the farmer. So I'd say that the requirements in the labs, and then we definitely need to look at expanding the 15-day harvest window. Here in Indiana, we allow for 30 days, which I think both, you know, the regulators and law enforcement, as well as the industry, I think it works out pretty well right now.
What kind of factors would have to go into determining how many labs would be needed?
So what they're doing, what the proposed rule is saying, is that the lab has to be DEA certified, essentially, to handle controlled substances. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think the only lab in the state that's able to do that is the state police crime lab. Hmm. And they already have a fairly significant backlog on getting tests out. So we want to just make sure that we have, one, we increase competition so we get better products and better, you know, quicker results and turnaround times. But two, again, we're not creating that bottleneck for the industry.
So is there potential then for private businesses to pop up and to be able to do this testing, or does it need to stay within the government, like with the police departments or that sort of thing?
Well, you see right now, some states allow you to send it to a private lab and that be your results for harvesting. Here in Indiana, really the only test result that matters at the end of the day, if you want to harvest your crop, is the one that you get back from the state seed commissioner. That's the controlling lab.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think more and more farmers are going to be doing their due diligence, meaning they're going to be testing their crop every week or so. And that way they know exactly what they're working with, and they can time when they need to harvest. So that way they ensure that they stay compliant under that THC threshold.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, Justin, I know you're going to be talking further about this on the Rob Kendall Show on WIBC here in Indianapolis. That's 93.1 FM, WIBC, the news and talk station. You'll be on there on Sunday somewhere between 1 and 3 p.m., and that's the Rob Kendall Show, and you'll be talking about this. I assume there's some other things you might be talking about?
I'll be on Sunday, and then we also spoke about, obviously, the Hemp at the Crossroads coming up this next weekend. So we're really excited about that. I'm really thankful for all the volunteers and the members that are supporting the initiative. So we're really, really, really looking forward to making that a success.
All right, Justin, is there anything else then that we need to add this week about this USDA internal final rule?
No, I'm just going to sound like a broken record and say we really need to make sure our members and farmers and everyone that's participating in the market submit their comments and figure out a way to make this work for everybody.
All right, Justin, as always, we certainly do appreciate you being on the show, and we look forward to hearing from you again next week. Or if we don't, we'll certainly see you out at the Hemp at the Crossroads Education and Trade Show at the Marriott East in Indianapolis there on the 16th and 17th.
All right. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.
All right. And as we continue to move on, once again, we get the pleasure of speaking with Jamie Campbell Petty, co-founder and executive director of the Midwest Hemp Council. And Jamie is here to talk about Hemp at the Crossroads coming up quick. Jamie, I understand we've got all the booths sold out, but there's still certainly tickets available.
We had so many requests for booths that as of yesterday, we were able to expand our booth space a bit. And I believe we have about two booths left. We expanded yesterday and then almost sold out already. So if you don't yet have a booth but you would like one, we have two more options. So you'll need to reach out to us as soon as possible. Tickets are starting to move fast, and so we encourage everyone to secure their tickets now. If you go to hempatthecrossroads.com, there's different tickets you can buy. There's a Saturday, Sunday pass. And then you also want to make sure and select your ticket for the cocktail party sponsored by Dream Nutrition that's happening on Saturday night.
What time is that cocktail party?
It starts at 7 o'clock.
Well, and then what would be included in that ticket for the cocktail hour?
We'll have appetizers, and there will be a cash bar. And we'll have some, we're going to have music by Brandon Stanley and a presentation by Dream, just a brief presentation by Dream.
Well, live music and a cash bar, you can't beat that. Reason enough alone to buy the ticket. What other events do we have going on, or other ticket opportunities?
So on Friday night, we're kicking off the weekend with a open house at Third Wave drying and processing facility in Kokomo, and that link is on our website as well. And this will be an opportunity for people to actually see the hemp dryer, a very large hemp dryer that they're using, and learn about Third Wave and their mission, and enjoy some hemp-infused foods and drinks.
Excellent. This is, of course, an opportunity for folks that may not be able to get down to Indianapolis over the weekend, but it at least could participate in that.
Yes, exactly. And we are really excited. We've got people coming in from the national level industry leaders like Michael Bowman. We have Rick Trojan with the Hemp Road Trip coming in. And so it's going to be a really nice diversity. We've got Eric Streenstra from Vote Hemp. They'll all be there on Friday night and continuing throughout the weekend. But we're most excited about bringing together all the Midwestern farmers that either grew this year or looking to grow next year so that we can network, build our supply chains, and talk about the lessons learned. It's going to be important. There's a lot more questions and answers right now, so let's get together and work on answering those.
And again, these tickets are selling out quickly. Do you anticipate people would be able to buy walk-up tickets?
I do not believe so, Jason. We have not made that decision yet. I can tell you that we are supposed to stop selling these tickets on the 13th. The deadline with the catering and accommodations is next Wednesday, the 13th. We are talking about having a walk-up option, but we have not announced that yet and it hasn't been decided.
Okay, well, we'll have another podcast before the Hemp at the Crossroads event next week, and we can update people on that. But odds are, if you want to get a ticket, you better get a ticket by this weekend.
Yes, exactly. And we just updated our agenda at hempatthecrossroads.com. You can go to that, and you can click on the agenda and get an idea on exactly who's talking when. It'll give you hours for the trade show, links to the tickets.
Excellent. Once again, Jamie Campbell-Petty, co-founder and executive director of the Midwest Hemp Council. As she said, you can go to the hempatthecrossroads.com website. And if you can't remember that, you can go to the midwesthempcouncil.com website. And front and center, you'll see the link there to click and go there. Anything else we need to add, Jamie?
I think that's it for right now. But looking forward to seeing everybody. We think it's going to be a fabulous weekend for all Midwest hemp advocates next week and growers and businesses.
Fantastic. We'll look for an update next Thursday, Jamie, and then we'll look to see you out at the Hemp at the Crossroads Expo.
Great. Thank you, Jason.
That is going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney & Evans. You can find out more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts, on our website, midwesthempcouncil.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.